Is Kathy Wilson in the room? We've got your messenger bag up here. Ask for her? Carol McConnell, your husband is trying to find you. Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good luck, Gayla. Trying to get everybody's attention, huh?
Are we ready for a door prize?
There you go.
Okay. All right, you got to listen to get your name called. Do your name. We have a $25 gift card to Starbucks. Donated by Glenn and Ursula McCulley. And we have Megumi Tanaka. Are you here? Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's your messenger bag?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to auction it off. You might want it. Well, that's not yours, huh?
Hey, stranger.
Oh.
Do we have everyone up here, all our panelists? Okay, we'll give it a minute. I am Galen Floy. I saw on the program that I am facilitating the Big Three, and I made me think that I needed a cape or something. And unfortunately, I felt like I drank some kryptonite last night. But it is my pleasure to introduce these three panelists. If we can have some quiet in the back there, thank you. When you first become part of a consumer organization, you're confronted with a lot of acronyms and initialisms and trying to figure out who's who. Well, we are very fortunate in this state to have people who are innovative thinkers, responsive, and relationship builders. And so it is with pleasure that I introduce these three people, and I'm going to ask that we hold off questions till all three have presented. We'll start with Superintendent Dean Stengem from the Washington State School for the Blind, followed by Luoma Durand, Director of Department of Services for the Blind, and last but not least, Danielle Miller, Program Manager and Librarian for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library. So take it away, Dean.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for once again having me here to tell you a little bit about the School for the Blind. And I got my watch up front, so my goal is that I'm going to be done at 11 o'clock, so I can make sure everybody else has time for the presentations. You know, for those of you that may or may not know, I said for me this is kind of like a trip down memory lane, and I, basically as I do this, it's really all about partnerships. This is not only for me my 25th year as superintendent, but it's also, I believe, a very important 25th year for WCV. Isn't this the... So I just was thinking about different things, and I know, where's Sue Amador? She's here someplace. There she is back, because she's the one that used to always do this. And I thought about 10, 11, 12 years ago is when that stopped, because I am, for those that may or may not know, that I'm retiring on June 30th this year, so... Oh, yeah. Well, good, see? But anyway... About 11 years ago, I think, another person retired, and it was Jan with the library, Jan Ames. And Sue used to get such a kick out of introducing, and she'd say, "And we're going to have Jan and Dean." So I really enjoyed the panelists before, and I liked the comment that Kathy Wilson made about the tent, because I always like to relate something. And I said, for me, my dad was a farmer. I grew up in North Dakota. And I never really felt that, whatever I did, I guess I've always been a farmer, because I thought my job in working with blind and visually impaired children, organizations throughout the country, staff members, is no different than a farmer. Because what I've always done is tried to plant seeds, plant ideas, try to stimulate ideas, and I said, and then basically nurture those ideas and try to I guess if you're a farmer, you say probably fertilize those ideas, and help them grow. But a lot of things have happened over the years, and it's been actually a wonderful, wonderful 25 plus years for me. As of June 30th, for myself, it'll be 42 years that I've been in the area of education of the blind. So, but my focus is back here in Washington, because I've been in three different states. I look back over the years and just a little bit of an update on the school, and as we move forward, things are in good shape. My goal between now and the end of the year, the governor's office is actually conducting a national search process right now. Hopefully they'll get some good candidates. And someone asked what was on my bucket list or what am I planning, and I said, well, right now my bucket list is make sure that everything is in great shape so that whoever comes in after me on transition will have wonderful people to work with, and things will be in place, and programs will continue, and hopefully we'll take things to a higher level. When I look back, when I started as superintendent, the major program at the school was the on-campus program, and we really tried to continue to improve that and make that a very, very strong program with intensified services for children, where we could see major, major changes. We implemented 24-hour IEP processes, because kids are in the cottage, kids go home every weekend. We not only serve kids in Washington, but we serve kids in the state of Oregon. For you remember a number of years ago the Oregon School for the Blind closed. When that happened, we worked with people in the legislature in Oregon and also in their Department of Education, and we were written into the Oregon State Plan to provide a full continuum of services. And so we are serving kids from both states. Kids are in and out. They receive intensive services, and I think they get some very good services on campus. Other things that have happened, though, is in 1990 is when we really started a major push for major expansion and outreach services, contracted services. We have itinerant teachers throughout the state. Actually, right now, we have more teachers that are employed through the outreach than on campus. So as of last year, we had some major changes in some key leadership positions. Craig Metter, who is the outreach director and state vision consultant, had been a teacher and a principal at one time. He took a job with the American Printing House for the Blind as vice president, and that gave us an opportunity, and we hired Emily Coleman. Emily is a great teacher, and she's in a leadership program right now. We'll be completing that, I think, by December. She's also a parent of a blind child, and she is the new outreach director and also the state vision consultant. And Emily lives in the Spokane area. So she's based out of Spokane, and actually she has an office at the ESD in Spokane. So those services continue to diversify. Another area that we've, about a year ago, we worked with Department of Services Blind, Department of Early Learning, Department of Health, Healthcare Authority, OSPI, Washington Center Disability Services. I'm probably missing someone. And that's trying to see if we could pull together a better way to really push the envelope and coordinate statewide early intervention services. And a person by the name of Diet Schneider was hired, and she has just done an amazing job and really getting some major, major changes occurring in early intervention. To give you an idea, and it doesn't mean this is the number of kids that were served, but 2 years ago there was 11 students that were counted on early intervention that received, that were basically counted through what's called the quota count or for materials for the American Printing House for the Blind. And we're hoping that number should be a little over 300 by the end of this year. So kids are coming out of the woodwork, and really some good services are really evolving, and some great partnerships are happening. Instructional Resource Center, Braille Access, Braille Production Center. Colleen Lyons retired June 30th this year. And Jennifer Fenton, she was here yesterday with a display. Jennifer Fenton is the new person in charge of the Ogden Resource Center. And so that program is going to continue to evolve and expand. And right now we also have 20 women with the women's prison that work with us and that are highly highly skilled. So that's in place. Professional development is an area that has just continued to explode. And that's we know we can't do this job by ourselves. We know that it takes really a lot of people to make sure that people are networked and have the right skills all over our state and the surrounding states. So we do a lot of professional development work. And when you look at actual seats and chairs at the school on professional development, we average about 300 people per year that we do professional development with. But we also do a lot of things online through online video clips on blindness tips, access to curriculum, and there's over 50,000 people all over the world access that information from our website each year, and that's an area we want to continue to build on. Research development, another area that basically has been really active for the school, and we formed some great partnerships with a number of universities, and we're always concerned about access. We're really concerned about smarter balance, one of the national assessments that kids have to take. And is that accessible the way it needs to be, and is it on an even level playing field with sighted children? And we met this week again with OSPI. We're optimistic that things are going to get there. It's probably going to take another year, but I think we are moving on the right course. But the big difference there is that we're also going to have to get the legislature to step forward and fund the equipment that's necessary so that kids can access the exam in a computer-based environment. So that is another process that we're working on. Other aspects on research, we've been working for about 4 years now with a very bright computer scientist, Dr. Andy Stefik, who is now based out of University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He started out Central Washington, then Southern Illinois University, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I'm hoping he ends up back in Washington, maybe at the University of Washington, doing some great stuff in regards to computer programming. And he's basically working in an area called Quorum, and very successful. So we're also training teachers from throughout the United States and Canada how to teach this computer programming for blind and visually impaired children. And we offer that on campus, and we also offer it online. And as of this year, we have also started a component on robotics on our campus. And, of course, kids are excited about that. Really excited about it. Also accessible online learning. That's an area that we've been pushing for years, and it really has almost felt like we're pushing a chain up a hill. You know, it's how do you get people to totally embrace this? This is where the world is at. Things are going to have to be that way. Kids need options. Every school district, every place does not offer a course the way it works best for a blind and visually impaired child. And what options do they have? And we think that we can make a significant difference. We focused on mathematics because we felt that was the area that kids were basically being, I don't want to say denied access, but they probably were not receiving information in a way that really made the most sense for them, especially with the changes in the way mathematics is taught being much more visual in nature from what probably it used to be. And so we've had some great success. So we're continuing to work with that and trying to form really a tight coalition of people from across the United States so that any place that there's a child that wants another option, they should be able to take that. And they should be able to take it when they want it and how they need it. And we've shared this information with school districts and say, if we can figure out how to do this with blind and visually impaired children, we should be able to do this with all children because everybody learns differently and giving them options. So I think there's great promise in that area. Just more attention needs to be put to that. The other areas, we're going to continue. We're continuing to offer summer school programs and options for kids. That's happening. And every so often people ask, do we still run an outdoor school for blind and visually impaired children? It used to be called Camp Magruder. We still do. We'd like to open that more. I'd like to see it open up more for kids all over Washington and Oregon. And we have some kids coming in. I think it could be a lot more. And it's now what was called Camp Magruder. And I know there's a number of former students in the audience that know that. And usually when you talk to them, a lot of times people will talk about the opportunities they had. I mean, the facility that is utilized is you really can't find a better place. There's freshwater lake, there's the ocean's right there, there's the jetty, there's sand dunes. It really gives you a full range of environments, and that's now called the Northwest Science Environmental Camp. So that is still being offered. A lot of things are happening. And I'm hoping they continue to happen. I guess in closing, what I'd like to just say, for me, it's been an absolute privilege to work with all of you and with parents, students throughout Washington, and actually I should say the surrounding state. And to me, it is absolutely amazing how fast 25 years goes. I look at, we have pictures of all the employees at the school, and they're all from the most senior to the least senior, kind of, as they're moving through the list. And to me, I still feel like I'm the new kid on the block. And my picture is on the top row, very close to the far left of all of the employees in regards to the longevity of people at the school for the blind. So a lot has happened. I think a lot more is going to continue to happen. We have strong people in key positions at the school. And I just think one of the most important things for whoever comes in to fill my shoes once I leave is to make sure that a strong, solid working relationship continues with both blind consumer groups, with school districts, with parents, with students, and with the legislature to make sure that children that are blind and visually impaired children, whether it's at the School for the Blind or throughout the state, continue to receive the most appropriate and best education possible. Thank you very much.
At Services for the Blind, we've had such an incredibly rich and positive relationship with Dean at the school, and we are going to miss you, Dean, enormously. Nevertheless, we still have a lot of time to get the good out of you.
We have a lot to get done yet.
Yeah. But I just loved your image of planting seeds, because you have definitely done that, and that's going to go on and on. So I'm just grateful for our relationship.
Once a farm boy, always a farm boy.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. Yeah, so I guess what's striking me right now is how much connection and continuity we actually have together here in this room. I mean, I was just thinking about how many of you have been either working with us in DSB or involved in our rehab council, or you've all been so involved with this in so many ways, and so we are us, and we are you, and that's so important because we're all in this work together. So I just want to highlight some folks, particularly some of your members who have served and are currently serving on our State Rehabilitation Council. And that council is really important to the agency. It advises us on policy, and it reports to the governor and the legislature. And each of those council members brings a particular perspective to the agency, which is so valuable. So just to mention our current council members, Sue Amateur is our awesome chair. Debbie Cook is our executive director. Steve Fixdall is our vice chair. And then we also have Gloria Walling and Yvonne Thomas Miller. But many of you have previously served on the council as well. Galen, Floyd, Cindy Van Winkle, Denise Colley, Marlena Lieberg, Alcal Canfield, Carl Jarvis. Maybe I'm leaving somebody out, but this is so important to the agency. So I just want to thank you all for that. You're volunteers. You don't get paid anything. We reimburse you for travel. But no, it's just so valuable to the agency and keeps us connected with people, you know, who we really want to serve and who we want to partner with. So right now we currently have two vacant positions on our council. So we're looking for candidates each position on the council has a particular constituency that they represent, and the two vacant positions right now represent business. So that means if you're a business owner or you employ other people in some way, we would love to have you join the council. So let us know. We can help you submit your application to the governor's office. I also want to let you know that we have a number of our DSB staff joining you at this convention yesterday and today and so on. And so I'm just going to really quickly name who those folks are, because if you don't know them already, I hope you have a chance to connect and get to know them, because we are you, you are us, and we want to connect. So we have Michael McKillop, our deputy director, Arlene Ito, our assistant director for operations, Julie Brandon, our orientation and training center manager, Mark Adrian, our business relations specialist, Liddell Lockwood, our communications specialist, Bobby McAlden, our business enterprise program manager, Liz Tunison, our business enterprise technician, Sotea Oak, Seattle counselor, Gil Kupat, Seattle counselor, Jonathan Utrera, Seattle counselor, Maureen Reggie, a rehab teacher, O&M Seattle, Jennifer Richmond, who you heard about this morning, a rehab teacher, O&M for our North region, Reggie George, assistive technology specialist from Yakima, and Lisa George, our reader driver. So, you know what? There's a lot of shared leadership, a lot of power in this room. And there are so many of you in here that we've worked with that I haven't even mentioned, former employees, et cetera. You've all been part of us. And, I mean, I'm looking at Doug Hildig over there and, you know, different people. We have a lot of power together. How many of you heard Paul Jajek talking yesterday? He talked about what you guys accomplished a few years ago when the agency when the governor, actually at the time, was trying to move the agency into DSHS. But you guys showed up at the legislature and you stopped that in its tracks. But anyway, so there's a lot of power in this room. So, and it will continue to be so. Anyway, this is the time of year when DSB celebrates the customers, our customers who have completed their rehab plans during the year and who have gone to work and or kept good jobs. So I just want to, I'm happy to share with you that this year, 169 of our customers are competitively employed at an average wage of close to $20 an hour. And last year there were 192. That doesn't mean that this year was a worst year. It just means that every year is not exactly the same and things fluctuate. But things, what it means is that on a two-year average, things are going strong. And I just want to say again, these are not just numbers. We talk about numbers, but this means that each person has taken charge of their life and their economic situation. These guys are out supporting their families. They're earning benefits. They're paying taxes. They're contributing to their communities. And so from this year's numbers, and I hate to keep saying numbers, but there are six of our folks who started up their own small business and they're self-employed. And I think it's also interesting that the average age of people who were successful in employment this year, we had three at age 21 and two at age 84. So, hey, old guys, and I'm getting to be one of those, you know, don't underestimate yourself. So anyway, every year we publish the list of these jobs and the employers on our website, and that is, we haven't quite refreshed our website yet this year, but it will be up this week. But so check it out, because I think that list is pretty exciting. It really illustrates the range, you know, the wide range of occupations that our customers succeed in. It's not just, you know, five or six kind of jobs. It's amazing. It should be mind-opening for you. So I hope you will go to our website and check out that list when we've got it up later this week. So this leads me into our into mentioning the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act. How many of you were here yesterday to hear Dan Fry? Okay. Yeah, so you kind of know this is the first time that act has been updated since 1998. And that's the act that actually enables our agency to exist. So it's important, because without that act, our DSB would not exist and would not be funded. Anyway, so this new version of the act brings more than just vocational rehabilitation agencies together. It brings all of our workforce partners together to collaborate, and the whole concept is that we are presenting a skilled workforce to the world of business, and we're trying to bring our workforce together to meet business needs. So there are these core partners like Voc Rehab, like Employment Security and Department of Labor, and that includes like dislocated workers, out-of-school youth, et cetera, community colleges, Voc Tech, adult education programs. And so it's a big challenge, because we, all these different players have to come together and try to put together a plan for our state. So it's really kind of chaotic and crazy, but it's good in a lot of ways, because we're all coming to the table and trying to talk about, okay, who are we? Who are people that we really need to serve who haven't been served from our systems previously? And so people with disabilities actually have a great opportunity in this new scenario to be represented, to be represented at local areas and state, at the state level, and really make their voices heard. And so Mark Adrian from our agency and Michael McKillop have been involved in many, many conversations with these workforce partners around the state and at many levels, and are bringing our voice to the table. And so we want to expand awareness that access is, you know, it's about technology, but it's way beyond that. It's a really comprehensive approach, and I don't know if you guys have tried to, like, go to one-stop centers or anything, but they haven't been typically very accessible. But now we have a voice. Now we're going to be represented on these levels. And our staff is also very involved in terms of the electronic accessibility in making this a web-based format and helping people, making it possible for people to bring their own personal mobile devices to one-stops and that sort of thing. But another part of it is access to apprenticeships, and that's a big one. So that's part of what we're doing. Services to youth, that's another huge thing we're working on, because that's a big part of the Reauthorization Act. And so we are emphasizing services to youth and transition age kids. We've been doing this for a long time, but now we need to expand on it, and we want to expand on it. And so we're still offering our whole array of youth services. We want kids to get the skills they need, the pathways to work. We've been participating in K-12 IEP meetings with TVIs and families around the state. So we've had short-term summer workshops in Seattle and Spokane that do pre-employment skills training to youth 9 through 13. But we want to expand that to more locations throughout the state, and we want to do it more frequently throughout the year. And then we've had our fifth-year program at the School for the Blind, the LIFT program, which has been incredibly valuable. And we're hoping to sort of perhaps pump that up a bit more too. Bridge, our summer university academic program, has been good. We've had what we call Yes 1 and Yes 2, our summer work experience and independent living programs. And we're going to continue those and hopefully expand those. In partnership with the school, we also are exploring a job developer program at the school, and we're excited about that and hope to get back to you with more about that. We want to have more local work experiences around the state, not just in the summer, but we're hoping for after school and weekends. And so we're probably going to be inviting our partners to submit proposals to us pretty soon through an RFP process. So we're open to creative ideas about youth and how to get ready for the workforce. We've had a great relationship with Jackstraw Productions. How many of you have heard of them? Yeah. Anyway, and we're looking to partner with maybe other nonprofits. And, I'm just seeing more and more of the staff out there that I didn't even mention. Patty. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Patty from our training center. Anyway. The deafblind community, we are looking to your organization, actually. You guys could submit a proposal to us so we could combine our funds. I don't know. I'm not timing myself, but I just want to say that there are new exciting things at DSB that you may or may not know about. We have English as a second language instruction now in our orientation and training center, which is really cool. We are looking to do entrepreneurial workshops, and we're going to be doing more of them. We have been doing, but we're doing more to help folks figure out if self-employment is good for them, you know, or what it takes to start up a small business. Anyway, lots of new things happening, and our staff is spread out around you, so if you're curious, about a particular thing, please connect with our staff. We have many reasons to celebrate and reasons that you have been involved in, and so I want to thank you, like our ADA 25th anniversary celebration this last year, where we honored Sue Amater, your own Sue Amater, who was so pivotal. You know, so pivotal in that whole 88 total breakthrough that happened for us years ago and we're still benefiting from. We had a White Cane Safety Day events around the state where city council, there were city council proclamations and many of you guys and our staff participated. That was fabulous. Anyway, I just want to say that I'm glad I don't have to follow Danielle because I did last time and she has so much exciting stuff to share with us too. So anyway, it's just a pleasure to be connected with everyone and I just want to remind us all how connected we really are. We are totally connected. So you're next.
Hi, I'm Danielle, and hi, Sarah. Thank you for that, Luoma. I don't know that it's going to be true today, but I'm happy to be here. And Dean mentioned Jennifer Fenton, who is now the director of the Ogden Resource Center, who was a colleague of mine through the State Library, and she was in the exhibits yesterday, on the table just behind mine. And she said she had had no idea what to expect and that it was so exciting in there. And we really were very busy. And at the end of the day, I said, you know what? I think this is actually one of my favorite things of the entire year. Because I always have so much fun. So thank you for having me and letting me have fun. And I should recognize all my staff that is here. Ellen Benson. Moving on. I decided to play a little game at the library table in the exhibits yesterday, and I was asking people to guess how many books they thought were on BARD as of yesterday morning, 6:57 a.m., and in Price is Right style, the person getting closest without going over would win a prize, which is a beautiful silk scarf that came here during our China exhibit, that I'll tell you more about later. And the winner was Glenn McCauley. So I'm hoping he will give the scarf to his beautiful wife, Ursula. And Glenn guessed 62,900. And yesterday morning, there were 69,849. So I know we want more, but I think that's pretty good. And more going up every week. And I know people are using it. We have really good statistics from that. We have a lot of people calling. So it's really fun. And if you need any help with that, definitely call us. We've got a bunch of people on staff who would be happy to work with you. I think Cindy said maybe I should mention some history things because it was the 25th anniversary, but I might be imagining that.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, first I asked some of my staff that had been here, been at the library for a very long time. And my favorite response, and this wasn't Alan, I'm letting off the hook, was from somebody who said, 25 years ago, I was this age. 15 years ago, I was this age. Now I'm this age, and I don't remember anything else. So I had to go on my own and pick a couple things. And as my friends up here have mentioned, also 1990, Jan Ames was the director, and she has meant so much to me. I just love her. She's been a wonderful mentor. 2000, 2001, the shift to cassettes, was completed, mostly. 2009 was when we started with the digital talking books and the digital talking book machines. That was when we were recognized as the Network Library of the Year of the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And that's also when our budget woes really started happening. So that wasn't that great. That wasn't a good part of that. And now, 2014-15, we've got the apps for Bard now on multiple devices, which is great. And another great thing is now the regional libraries, like us, we are allowed to put our locally produced books up on Bard. Which, it's a wonderful way to share. It's easier than how we did interlibrary loan before. It's quick. It's getting more information up there, and it's adding to what NLS is adding. So that is really exciting. And our audiobook production department is just cranking away. They are up to, I think, 77 narrators, close to 25 reviewers. One of our staff is moving full-time into audio to help with getting our books, about 300 of them, that haven't been remarked up and formatted to go on Bard, up to Bard, and working on our new books. And I think last month they finished 14 books, some of them quite long, and so they are going at great guns. I'm very excited about that. And then on the other side of the budget, 2015, we have flat funding. We had no cut, so I will not complain, but we are still a lot lower than we were when I started in 2008, but I truly believe that we have that flat funding, and we are part of a revenue account and got an increase in filing fees for this revenue account because of you guys. All the calls you made to your legislators, the letters, the emails, the people that went and saw their legislators in person, went to hearings, it really paid off. Because we would have been in big trouble without that dollar increase. The dollar doesn't sound like very much, but over the course of a year, and these are filings when somebody buys a house or remodels a house, things like that. So now it's at $3 instead of $2. And I think if we hadn't gotten that, the state library, which is where we get our budget mostly, was looking initially at about a $67,000 hole for this year, this fiscal year. So you guys really made a difference, and I appreciate that. And you've done that before, going to a hearing at the legislative building when they wanted, I don't even, 3 or 4 years ago, when they wanted to smush us into a bizarre agency made up of like 9 different things that sort of were similar by a thread. And the chair of that committee, actually, within a half an hour of everyone testifying and the hearing ending, she sent me an email and said, "We're not putting you in the group." Like, then they ended up not doing it at all, but we were out because of you guys. So our outreach efforts, I know, you know, I think it's the same for Dean and Luoma and all of us getting the word out about our services, about our organizations throughout the state can be really difficult. So that's always been something we've been working on as we can travel, as we can afford that, as we can go on trips in the state to visit our friends or family and stop in at places so it's not costing the library anything, mailing letters to veteran centers, you know, all sorts of stuff. And it's worked. You know, we have new patrons added every year. I'm really pleased about that. We get into the retirement homes and care facilities, and they do have a very high turnover of staff. They're activity directors, and we have to, you know, it's difficult. You have to start over with them almost every year, maybe even more often. And so that's a challenge, getting out there. And I was very lucky. Several months ago, I got a grant for outreach, $25,000, essentially for travel, you know, mileage, hotel, materials, things like that. And I divided it up, adults, older adults, and kids. And so Amy Ravenholt, our assistant manager, has been traveling around and going to as many places as possible She's trying to hit the entire state. Some counties and towns will not be there, but as she can get around or get people together. She's starting primarily in eastern Washington because of the weather. And if anybody has talked to Frank or seen the email, he went on some visits for a couple days with Amy. And we really think that it's more meaningful and it's more legit if there's a patron there, if there's someone who's blind or visually impaired. If I'm there trying to sell this book, it might not be as compelling as if Frank was with me, for example. So what we did is send out an email message on our listserv, which hopefully you saw. If not, I'll tell you. We want to collect a list, sort of a database of names of people who are interested in participating in outreach, which means you would give us your name and your city and what you would like to do if it's really something specific. And then if we are going to be in that area and the timing and funding works, we'll get a hold of you and see if you can join us on those visits, or see if you have, maybe your chapter has a meeting, or you have some inns in your community that we can visit. So if you want to be part of that, you want to get a hold of David Junius, J-U-N-I-U-S, at the library. He's the outreach and volunteer coordinator. And you can call the general phone number at the library, 800 or 206, and ask for him. Or email, it's david.junius@sos.wa.gov, just like mine, but his name. So that, we hope, is going well, which leads me into our former children's librarian, who I know some of you worked with, Mandy Gonson, who was just amazing. She really, we hadn't really had a children's program for a couple years, other than what those of us who were there could sort of eke together and try and have an event, or try and, you know, who can talk to the parent the best or the teacher the best and really do our best. And she got so much going, and so many families and kids activated and interested. And she is a very meticulous person, I'll tell you. She planned out her itinerary for her half of the money, a city, the ESD, the school, the mileage, the time, the date, everything for the whole state. It was fantastic. And then she left. So for about the last 6 months, I think, which has been over the summer reading period of time, which is a big time for the kids, I've been trying to be the youth librarian with the help of one of our staff members, Rocio Vargas. And we were worried. We thought it wasn't going well because we weren't hearing any feedback. But then kids came to our culminating event, and we heard good feedback, and we even got a card. And we thought, oh, thank goodness. We were doing all of this, trying our best, you know, in the absence of somebody who really specializes in children and youth services. So it worked. It got us by. And I have just hired somebody for our new youth services librarian. And I'm really excited about her. Her name is Marion. I am sure if you say Marion the librarian to her, she will have heard that before. so you might think twice about that. She's in Montana right now, a teen librarian at the Butte Public Library, and will be moving over here, and her first day will be December 7th. That first week will probably be very overwhelming for her, and then there are the holidays, but in January, I want to look at having at least one sort of reception at the library to welcome her and the family groups in your organization and the other consumer groups and Janet George, you know, anybody who has any connection with kids in the state to come and meet her and brainstorm and just get connected. And then once she's had a chance to take a breath, I'm going to give her Mandy's list and say, here you go. It's already planned out. We really wanted to hit the schools at the beginning of the school year. That's not working out, but we're still going to get there. So we will get there for this year. And if the outreach appears successful, we're keeping statistics, how many people signing up as best we can by looking at their address and things like that. How many places visited, how much time, how circulation increases from that, or you know, anything like that. We have a statistics genius at the library, Tyler Kay, so he's keeping that. And if I can show our board of trustees that that was successful, they said they may give us $25,000 each year for outreach, which would be incredible. So I'm hoping that that'll pan out. And just a change, another change in the library, not us, not our library, but the former state librarian did step aside to take a job working on managing, organizing federal documents. And so they have started a national search for a new state librarian. There is no deputy state librarian right now, because they want the new state librarian to be able to hire the deputy state librarian. And there are a few other empty positions. And these searches can take a long time. You know, hopefully we get Dean's person and the library person soon. Until then, Greg Lane, who is our deputy secretary of state, is the acting state librarian. And he's the first to admit he's not a librarian. So he's been great to work with, because anything I ask for, he's like, sure, because he doesn't really have any way to tell me that's a bad idea. So I kind of wish he would stay my boss, because I really like him. But hopefully the person that comes in, you know, will be just as great. And they are making sure to hire somebody who actually has a library and information science degree, which is meaningful to me as someone who has that degree. And we're getting a little pushed out. I won't even go into that discussion, though. The last thing I wanted to share, we had this amazing opportunity. We had people from the China Braille Press and the China Library for the Blind in Beijing do a tour of the library, and we were kind of talking. They said, well, do you think, you know, we should collaborate and stay in touch? And I said, of course, thinking, I don't know, we'll email each other or something. They came back the next day with more people and said, well, what do you think about us doing an exhibit here? And I said, that's a great idea. We'd love that. Were you thinking sometime next year? And they said, no, September 21st. And that was like 4 weeks away. And oh my gosh, how can we possibly do this? But I truly believe, well, some of the things that I get my hands into might seem frivolous and not connected. The more our name can get out there, the more people will know about us, and it can be a form of outreach and support, and getting important people to come, that kind of thing can be really beneficial. So I said, why so soon? And they said, well, the First Lady of China, one of her areas of interest is children with disabilities. And she was going to be in town with President Xi Jinping in Seattle starting on the 22nd. So their goal was to get her and maybe President Xi to this exhibit. And so we were, you know, I had Secret Service, U.S., and Chinese equivalent Secret Service, and the Chinese ambassador to the United States, and these giant, like, black Suburbans with tinted windows in front of the library. It's like there every weekend, and very excited, a lot of work. And then, I don't even know if I should say this, but I probably always share too much information. They decided, the Secret Service-y people, that our building was not secure enough. Why? Yes, because Amazon. Not really. There's just so much construction in our neighborhood, Amazon, taking over the area. And there are about 1 million cranes. And I guess it's hard to keep snipers off cranes. And all these new tall towers. And depending on where they were in the building, for those of you that have been there, one side is all glass, so we didn't get them. But we did get the special minister of information for the People's Republic of China and some other bigwigs, and Luoma and Dean and Denise and a few, Mika, and I don't want to leave any, Sue, a couple other people come to the ribbon cutting, which was a really fun event, and I'm probably running out of time, but I'm a talker. as you know. So I thought, you know, we spent an entire weekend talking about how to do this ribbon cutting. And in my head, like, it's a ribbon. You tie it somewhere, or two people hold it end to end, and you get a pair of scissors and you cut it. What is the big deal? So they're having me stand in different places and taking pictures and doing this, and I'm moving, and then they're measuring. And I never understood until the day before when they said I needed to get 9 women to come for the ribbon cutting ceremony. What? What are you talking about? And it, I guess, you know, I learned a lot of cultural things, which is really neat. And we got a ton of Braille, including a ton of kids' Braille from China. And they're sending us some videos as well. So that's pretty neat. But these women had these beautiful red, red and gold decorated platters. And on each one was an enormous red bow. And not just like the bow on your sneakers, but a Christmas bow where it goes all around, all over the place. And then there was a length of ribbon, and the next girl with a big bow and a platter, all in the U shape, 9 of them, because we had 7 ribbon cutters. And they brought scissors with gold handles engraved with Chinese characters. And so we each stood in a section and at the same time, sort of, cut the ribbon in all these places. And I don't know, you know, if we're around or at the banquet, if anybody who was there has, you know, any comments, I just thought it was so cool. Nothing I would have ever expected. And I know that there's a song or something, Big in Japan, but at least for a couple days we were big in China because there were tons of Chinese media there. And the next day I was shown at least 8 print and online publications in China that were major papers. And their main news station had a video, which he's not here, but it was mostly Kirk Adams' head. but they had a video on their major news, which was great, but also punctuated how annoyed I was with our local media. We called them, we talked to them, we emailed, and none of them showed up. We'll keep pushing it. Becky Bell got us media 1 year. Maybe I'll hire her next time. But anyway, this China thing was really fun. I know it was hard on my staff. We had to make break rooms around the library. We had to move the pop machine. The workers who built the exhibit into the rooms, it took 8 days. This was huge wooden boxes to customs on a ship from Beijing. Probably cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it was very disrupting, I think, for a little while. But I know, it's, you know, some people got a lot out of it, and they've stayed in touch. I just got an email a couple days ago about these videos they're sending. They left some technology with me. There was a really neat, kind of like the big iPhone size or iPod size magnifier that would play audio and contrast colors and size and had a USB port and a whole bunch of things. And you turn it on, and there are these icons, and they're all Chinese. But you could kind of figure it out because there were pictures. And it was very, very cool and not a cheap thing that they had developed. And there had been some kids at the exhibit, and so they said, I want you to give this to a kid. And one of our kids, he's 11, and he's really, really cool. I gave it to him, and he wrote me a letter and has been so delighted. And they have a friend who is from China, and he's an 11-year-old boy and figuring it out just fine. So so it's all good. And I may get a chance to visit the Braille library and the Braille press in the summer. So I'm hoping for that. Oh, no. I guess that's all. Galen's standing behind me. Thank you.
Okay, as our mic runners get ready, I'm going to ask that people hold comments so that people with questions can get their answers. Are our mic runners ready?
I have a microphone, would like to ask a question.
Okay, Cindy.
Cindy, yeah. I have two, actually. Dean, what is being done to hire or at least provide a search for viable candidates for leadership positions, administrative positions, through the School for the Blind? I know that you have several people who are blind or visually impaired as teachers and other supportive staff, but it doesn't seem to me that you guys do very good at hiring blind people in administrative positions. And so I'm wondering why, and if you guys are planning to do anything to rectify that. And then my other question has to do with access technology. And I'm wondering, Luoma and Dean, if you have considered implementing some training with NVDA for your students and customers, respectively, so that not necessarily, although I use NVDA now personally all the time at home, but it is such a great tool that you can take with you anywhere. And so if you go for a job at a place that does not already have something accessible, you can make it accessible on the fly. And it just seems like we should be really moving toward not necessarily placing people in a position where they have to ask somebody to purchase something for $1,400 when they can take it with them everywhere they go. So those are my two questions.
Okay. Is this on? Yep. Okay. Well, first, your first question, we do advertise those positions. The key factor is what we find out is, and we try to encourage people to go back to school and get the right credentials. I can't hire people into those positions based on certification unless they have the right credentials. I'm going to give an example of that right now in regards to the superintendent's position. And I'm not sure exactly why this was done, but the governor's office was really surprised. I was pushing hard for them to post the position and get this going early on, because the credentials that are required for the superintendent at the School for the Blind are not in WAC. They're written right into RCW. Very specific. And in checking with this to get a little history, why was that done? Well, first, it probably was important to make sure that the person has the right credentials to do the required job. But the other part was, over the years, there have been numerous times they tried to merge the two schools together. And by establishing what the credentials are, and it specifically has to, you have to be a teacher of the blind and visually impaired and X number of years of administration background and so forth. I think they were put in place there to prevent some of those collapsing, just saying, well, the person at the School for the Deaf will be the superintendent at the School for the Blind also. So the other positions, we have had people that are blind and visually impaired in leadership roles. The last person was our outreach director, Dee Amundson, and she decided she stepped down from that position. She wanted to go back as a teacher. The position basically are posted, and people have the opportunity. We have not had the applicants, Cindy, of people that are visually impaired for those key positions that have the right credentials. Yes.
I did turn it on. It just takes a minute. The position, there are some positions that probably, I believe, should require somebody to have a knowledge of Braille in leadership positions. And I know recently that was filled by somebody that didn't, and I guess I don't understand how that position would have been hired by somebody that would have a good knowledge of Braille.
Okay, I'm sure you're referring to the library position.
The ORC.
Yeah, the ORC. Yeah. Well, you remember that position is Instructional Resource Center and the Braille Access Center. Now, when we looked at the candidates and based on their background and so forth, by the way, the person that has hired is taking Braille, and by the end of this year, I think we'll have a pretty good background in Braille. But she also has her master's degree in library science. if we would have had other people that applied, we didn't have a lot of applications again. It went out through a lot of places for that position. But we were looking with someone to have a strong background. Colleen did not have that. Colleen Lyons, who was there before, and I had hired Colleen. We started out that position with the development of the Braille Access Center, the Braille Access Center. We did have the IRC. We basically got that years later, and we combined those two positions under Colleen. But we also realized if we're going to expand services, Instructional Resource Center, and make those connections, there's really an advantage to have somebody with a library media background. So that's how that decision was made. But again, what I would highly encourage people, if you're interested, like in anything, in getting into some leadership roles, please go back, get the credentials. We're required to have the credentials for most of our leadership positions because they require not only a teaching degree in a lot of those positions, they also require, with changes in state law right now in regards to what's called TPEP, Teacher Principal Evaluation Program, which is required, that person who is a lead for outreach, a lead person under a principal, they have to have their principal's credentials on top of their TVI area. So it can't be a political appointment. It can't be an appointment of people without the credentials. They're going to have the credentials by state law. And we would like more blind and visually impaired people to apply for positions. We just have not had that happening. And we do advertise through all the different sources. That the second question, and I'll be quick on that, NVDA. I really love NVDA. I think our kids are using it. At our school, I feel we need to push more on that in regards to it. The kids, I think, are sometimes ahead of the staff on it. They're using it all the time. I think it's a great program. It's changing rapidly. It's improved vastly over the last year and a half. And the nice thing about it, it's a free service.
Hi. I'm going to ask Michael McKillop to respond to the technology question. Are you out there, Michael?
The question is, NVDA, are we at DSB looking to do training for NVDA? And certainly our AT specialists do. Reg George is here, and he can probably talk to you about how they're all involved in getting NVDA into people's hands, because, like you said, Cindy, it's free. It's fabulous. Why not? We are also looking at broadening the instruction in the OTC. And what I love about Julie Brannon as program manager, she's created space for the instructors to do curriculum development. So after every term, they've got a week to create new curriculum and to change up what they're doing. So currently it's not there, but it can be and it should be.
If you have a question, please raise your hand and call
this,
your name.
This is Glenn. Okay. And Cindy asked part of what I was going to ask, but then I wanted to also ask Danielle. I think if you go back and look at your contest, you said there was only 69,000 and something there. I told you 629,000. I think if you go back and look at, so I was way off the mark. So I mean, although I'm sure my wife would love the scarf, I'd rather see the real winner get the.
Oh, I'll look right now.
Okay, any other questions out there?
Yes. This is Julie Brannon.
I was after Glenn. I was told I'm after Glenn. It's Chris. And Danielle, I wanted to, this is in reference to the China exhibit, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, was the Braille that the Chinese brought over Braille in Chinese for the exhibit, or was it Braille in English produced in China?
Both. And I forgot to mention, Brian from NBP was there for 2 days and brought the B2G for people to look at and brought some of the Braille that they produce. So that was nice to have him there for 2 days. The exhibit was on for a week, 7 days. And I have both at the library. I actually brought three books with me here that are in Chinese Braille, which is phonetic. It's our Braille with a lot of other stuff because they have more sounds and different diacritics and contractions, that kind of thing. And I have one that they produced that's in English. And I do think a lot of what they I have a history, like the major history of China, 18 volumes, 2 sets. If anyone wants to come to the library and look at them. And if I remember right, those are in English. But anyway, yes, Chris, we have both.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. And this is kind of really unusual question, but this is Sarah Edick. I was just licensed as a certified peer counselor for people with mental health challenges. And I know Danielle is willing to work with people with Department of Vocational Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery. My concern is that there's not a lot of support for the blind in the community. I don't know if at the school, but I've noticed there's been a lack of support from Department of Services for the Blind. I'm not saying that to criticize. I want to see that change, and I want to know how that is going to change. I don't think it's going to change without the help of somebody who's been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
This is Luoma. I would be happy to connect with you and hear more about what kind of support you would like to see from Services for the Blind. Yeah, so I don't know if we should do this now, but probably just one-on-one.
I'll just throw out real quick, yes, since it's good timing. Sarah put down 60,000. So you're closest.
Okay. Congratulations, Sarah. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Let's give our big three a big hand. And do we have a door prize?
Before door prizes happen, this is Julie. I'm actually talking for someone else. I'm talking for Marlena Lieberg. She wants you to know if you need a volunteer just to stand up, and the volunteers have been instructed to connect with you. So a lot of people are saying they're not finding volunteers, but just stand up and they'll come and assist you. Thanks.
That reminds me. Thank you, Julie. Before we have our door prize, John and Carol McConnell will be selling calendars for the Pierce chapter. So connect with them. Door prize?
Okay. All right, what we have a goodie bag with an assortment of goodies and $10 from the South Kitsap Council of the Blind. Oops. And let's see, the name I have for that is, could you hold this for me? Thank you. Miriam Torres. Nope. Okay. Mike O'Neill. Okay. Okay, let's see. James Bryant. Is James Bryant here? Okay, awesome.
Excellent. Congratulations. Someone left a brown messenger bag up at the front tables here. Steve Fixel? Okay. Oh. Well, if you're missing a messenger bag, we've got it. We will convene back here at 1:30. Go forth, mingle. Any other? Yes. Okay, Eric Hunter, our treasurer, is up here at the front table. If anybody needs to get money to Eric, do so now. He won't be here forever, and whatever that means. So see you back here at 1:30. Oh, sure. I wonder if that's Jeff Tom's bag.
Oh, it's yours? Oh, okay.
Oh, yay.
Hi.
With your smile so tender.